The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
And welcome to NFL Live. Hey, there are people out there predicting the end for Drew Brees after a Monday Night Football loss to the Raiders, but someone here says not so fast. We get to that momentarily. Dan Orlovsky's here. Marcus Spears is over there. And Adam Schefter with us all show long. We begin with you, Sheffy. So much happening all around the league, but let's start with Blake Bortles back in the NFL.
Well, Laura, one day after the Broncos said that Drew Lock would be sidelined for 3 to 5 weeks, they basically reached agreement on a one-year deal to bring Blake Bortles to Denver. Keep in mind, the Broncos almost signed him last year. Will now go ahead and sign him this year once he passes through his COVID protocols. He may not be available this week, but he will be on the roster going forward. And Vic Fangio, Blake Bortles' new coach, is one of three head coaches to be fined by the NFL, along with Pete Carroll and Kyle Shanahan, for not wearing masks this past weekend. Each coach was fined $100,000. Each of their teams was fined $250,000. It's over $1 million worth of fines, and the league may not be done yet because replays last night or the actual game coverage showed Sean Payton not wearing a mask, John Gruden not wearing a mask. And so if the league acted before, there's a real chance it's going to act again and more fines could be coming.
All right, Shefty with us all show long and more on last night. I don't want to put anybody on blast, but all of us here picked the Saints. So there you go. Hey, it was a tough go for us and a tough go for Drew Brees in week two on Monday night. Dan Orlovsky, the struggle started early for Brees.
Yeah, just first of all, you got to see him move in the pocket there. That extra time gets that receiver laid out. Watch the safety on the left side of the screen. See that in-breaker, bang, bang play. That pocket movement got him off his spot.
Saints would have to settle for a field goal there, second quarter of the final minute, and things not getting better for Brees here, intercepted by Nicholas Morrow.
But again, he's got to move from the internal part of the pocket. Now, this is not the Drew Brees that we're used to seeing. He's got to see that that linebacker is going to hang in the middle of the field, even though the internal pressure is coming, and move on to a different progression. That is just not the normal play that we've seen from Drew Brees.
Let's go to the fourth quarter. The struggle's not stopping here. What sticks out to me on this play, how much time Drew Brees has there, but not able to make the throw.
Part of their play action pass, and everyone's going to go, man, how did Drew miss that? Beautiful back angle here. Watch the tight end. He pauses right there, and then he starts to go again. That is kind of the in sync that Sean Payton's talking about. That's not only just Drew Brees. The players have to get in sync with the quarterback as well.
According to NFL Next Gen Stats, Drew Brees' targets have more than 4 yards of separation at the time of the throw, which actually ranks second in the NFL this season. You see there, Brees sandwiched between Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes, but a really important difference, those guys actually hitting their targets. Brees is not. His QBR ranks 17th in the league, while his completion percentage has dropped 10 percentage points since last season. So after last night's lackluster performance, Brees himself said rumors of his demise are greatly exaggerated, and he was without one of the best receivers in the league with Michael Thomas. But we can't ignore the reality that this Saints offense is out of sync at times. Dan, are you concerned about Brees, his age, the arm strength, with what you've seen so far this year?
No, I'm not. First of all, let's talk about being in sync, right? This is an offense and a player that is built on physical repetitions. Haven't had that because of the offseason. Not only he is, but all those other players have to get used to seeing the same stuff as Drew Brees. So these reps are important for them. Second of all, the arm strength. One, Drew has never had a dominant arm. Is it good enough? Absolutely. Just watch these throws from last night. That's a 17-yard ball that goes on a relatively good line. Plenty strong enough for him to kind of operate this offense that they want to. Another one, drop back pass. You got to throw a crosser up over defenders. Perfect placement. That arm strength is plenty strong enough. They're not going to throw the ball 50 yards downfield. Left hash all the way across the field outside those right numbers. Strong enough. Ball on an in-breaking route when you got to move defenders and throw it. Strong enough. So is Drew Brees' arm what it was 10 years ago? No, of course it's not. But it's never been the backbone of this offense. This offense has been about rhythm and timing and anticipation. So the quarterback needs to get those reps. but so do everybody else. And then the aspect of Michael Thomas, and this is what people need to understand. They scored 24 on the road without their number one receiver. And their number one receiver, they build everything through. Hmm. Not only to get Michael Thomas touches, but also to make it easier for everybody else to get theirs. So very, very little panic or worry about Drew Brees or the Saints offense.
Yeah, I'm not worried particularly about his velocity either. I just think watching the first 2 weeks, and we had some critiques and criticisms for Drew Brees against Tampa Bay. And obviously Dan is alluding to it with having no offseason, but previous to the season starting, we were under the impression that this was one of the teams that was not going to deal with the issues that Dan is talking about right now. And obviously Brees just doesn't look concise. He doesn't look as pristine as we're used to seeing him operate at a high level offensively. I'm with Dan. The arm strength has never been something that our jaw dropped and said, look at that ball Drew Brees just threw. So that's not the concern. But D.O., when we get to the point of talking about a shortened, abbreviated offseason, and we're looking at teams have success, Aaron Rodgers had a shortened, abbreviated offseason. Cam Newton had a shortened, abbreviated offseason, way shorter than everybody else's. We're looking at Russell Wilson operate at a high level. We have to point to the fact that Drew Brees, along with Sean Payton being together this long, are not in sync. Minus Michael Thomas is an issue, but, dude, this is not the norm for them. So the overreaction for people is not that out of the ordinary.
Yeah, it's interesting because nobody likes preseason games. We can all establish that, but it does seem like if this were the second preseason game, a lot less people would be panicking. Let's bring Shefty back in here. How close were we, Adam, to not even seeing Brees play this season?
Well, it was a real possibility there, Laura. I think the Saints felt like after the Pro Bowl that he was going to retire at that point in time. In fact, Drew Brees even told some members of the organization that he was planning to retire after the Pro Bowl. Everybody got emotional about it. They thought it was the end. And, of course, he did reconsider, even though he did sign a television contract with NBC. So he's got the television deal waiting for him whenever he decides to finish football. There were people who thought he would be finished with football after last season. He changed his mind. He decided to come back. But I think most people sense and believe that this will be his last season. And so, again, this will play out that way. You never know with Drew Brees. He could always change his mind. But I think people believe this ultimately will be his last season, though he's always operated on a year-to-year basis.
Yeah, that's a really important point. Okay, tons more coming your way on NFL Live today. And, yeah, the Falcons blew a 20-point lead, but what's the fallout from the onside kick? Did their hands team really not know the rules? The latest from Atlanta is on the way. And the Raiders off to a hot start by beating the Panthers and the Saints. Coach Gruden and his team are hyped. Watch this. What was that? Dan, don't do it. Help. NFL Live is brought to you by Pepsi Zero Sugar. All the cola flavor, none of the sugar.
For the onside kick, Zuerlein dribbles it to the left. Big scramble for it as it has gone 10 yards.
And the Cowboys have the football.
Good snap, good haul, 46 yards. Yes, sir, kiss that pig.
Yeah, my condolences to people like Luda and me who are from Atlanta. I love that there. Might have thought the Falcons were going to get a huge win over the Cowboys. Yikes, didn't happen. The onside kick that you're going to see right here was a thing of nightmares from Atlanta. The Cowboys actually calling this a watermelon kick seemed very confusing for the Falcons. Either way, head coach Dan Quinn said his players knew what to do. Take a listen.
The execution, like I said earlier, is on everybody, players and coaches. You know, certainly the players know the rule. I know there was some talk, you know, regarding that. If you think it's going to go out of bounds or not make it to the 10, to the restraining line, you know, that's an option to back off. But when the moment comes to be aggressive for the ball, you always take that moment. When we didn't do that, you know, that's, you know, disappointing for us.
So Dan Quinn says that, and then about an hour later, Falcons owner Arthur Blank was on SiriusXM NFL Radio, disagreed with Quinn's assessment.
clearly on the last play of the game yesterday, our players, didn't do what they, either what they were instructed to do and they didn't understand it, or it's clear though they didn't, in my view, they didn't clearly understand what the rules were and exactly what they had to do. I think that's demonstrated when you watch the video of it.
All right, Dan, who's to blame for the play?
The coaches. Listen, failing to prepare is like preparing to fail. If you go back and watch this game, the Cowboys actually lined up for their onside kick in the very same fashion. The ball was on its side just like that. Atlanta calls timeout. Awesome. So you call timeout. In that situation, you should be going over with your hands team exactly what to expect in that moment. I don't care if you know it. Are you prepared to execute it, right? And right. So they should be going, guys, ball has to go 10 yards. And if you touch it, it becomes a live football. If it goes past 5 yards and is moving slowly, we should be prepared to hop on the football. I can't believe that all of those guys on the hand team were prepared in that moment to touch or to field it, and they all just watched it. There's a difference between knowing what to do and being prepared to what to do. That is complete. What did you call timeout for? Like, what did you call timeout for? Just to tell them, like, what the situation of the game was? You call timeout in that moment to be great at situational football. And I can't believe that your players were prepared to play good situational football there. That is 100% on Atlanta's coaches.
Marcus, you were on the hands team. Whose fault is this?
The players. They got to know to get down on the ball. When the ball, look, when your hands team and the ball presents itself, now let me say this too. We're dealing with different rules than the conventional onside kick and how it used to be, because usually these guys are running with a full steam ahead and the guy on the back row usually makes the play because you're trying to do a pop-up kick. But the bottom line is this. All of the Atlanta Falcons guys standing around that ball thinking that I'm going to wait till it goes 10 yards before I can get the ball. You should know you can get the ball before it goes 10 yards. It was like, who going to get down there first once it passed 10 yards? Listen, it could be a coaching error. It could be all of that you want to say. Every hands team guy is supposed to know when the ball presents itself to be recovered, recover the ball. Now, this doesn't at any way take blame away from Dan Quinn. I'm with Dan. He should feel terrible. And it is not the player's fault to a certain extent, although Julio could have caught a touchdown as well. That's not Dan Quinn's fault either, him just dropping a pass in the end zone, which Julio doesn't do ever. The second thing is this. You up by this amount of points. We've watched this happen for the second time. At what point do you figure out a way to coach your team to not give up that lead and give the other team that many opportunities to get the ball back? That's my point in talking about the coach and Arthur Blank.
Marcus, you just said that all those players stood there and waited for the ball to go past 10 yards. Everybody watching this show right now knows that the ball becomes live after 10 yards, but the receiving team is allowed to touch it before it goes 10 yards. Everybody knows that. So how can you sit there and say right. It's on the players when they were all standing there in your perception or idea is that they were waiting for the ball to go past 10 yards. That means it's either coached that way.
It's simple.
What? What's simple about it?
It's simple. When you on the hands team and you receiving the ball, you can go get the ball as soon as the kicker kick it.
Exactly.
Every hands team dude I ever played with knows that.
But none of them did it.
All of them.
None of them did that.
Dan, okay. I understand what you're saying, but at some point, we're professional athletes. We are grown men as well. And Atlanta had 4 guys standing around looking at the ball like they didn't know they can touch it after 10 yards. As a player, you're supposed to know that regardless of what you're talking about.
Hey, let me just,
that's my point.
Let me just say something. It kind of feels like you guys are making almost the same argument here. Listen, yeah, that's my point too. Let me throw one thing at you, Marcus.
No, Dan, Laura.
Go ahead.
Dan is saying, because your coach didn't tell you what I just said, you shouldn't know that.
But it's basically
I'm not waiting on anybody to tell me something I should already know.
Hey, let me throw one thing at you, Marcus, because the Cowboys did say they called this a watermelon kick, and basically they're saying that as you might spin a watermelon, you can spin a football. They practice this. They try to make it do that, and obviously a football is going to spin even more than a watermelon. I'm kind of being funny here, but is that part of what factored into this particular situation, that the thing was spinning like crazy and looked a little different than your regular on-time kick?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Ailes, you could call it a damn avocado kick, a pear kick, a peach kick, an apple kick. You can call it whatever fruit kick you want to call it. Every hands team do know when you looking at the ball and you can control it, get down on the ball. Period. Like, this is, my mind is
blown. I'm going to leave this here, Marcus.
Thinking that a coach needs the tail guy.
Then why did you call timeout? Why did the coach call timeout? To go over what? Because the ball was on the ground for Dallas in a non-traditional way. If you call timeout in that situation, you should be telling your team, be prepared for a unique onside kick. And again, hitting them with that stuff. Guys, be ready for something different. It has to go past 10 yards. If it's floating between 5 or 6 yards, you be ready to jump on it. You have to be ready in that moment. You're saying they didn't look like they knew the rules. I'm telling you, they look unprepared. They look unprepared, and that falls on coaching.
Okay.
Hey, okay. What they should have said in the timeout is,
I want them to overcome coaching.
Well, there you go. But what they should have said in the
and
timeout,
know that they can get the ball.
They should have said, be prepared for a watermelon, avocado, pear, or any other fruit or vegetable that might come your way. Is an avocado a fruit or a vegetable?
That's great. I love
it. Okay, don't look now, but the NFC West just might be the best division in the NFL. Has anyone looked better than Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson through 2 weeks? Dan's all in on another team in that division. He'll tell you why next. Oh, they're telling me in my ear it's a fruit because it grows on a tree.
Cut it open, you take
Fun
out the
fact,
pit, you slice it up.
I do like guacamole. We'll be right back.
We off the rails.
Huge win for the Raiders in Monday Night Football over the Saints. And Derek Carr was 9 of 10 for 98 yards and a touchdown on third down last night. He's really been flying under the radar in that territory since the start of last season. On third and fourth downs, he leads all passers in completion percentage, touchdowns, and yards per attempt. His QBR on such downs trails only Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson in that span. Now, Raiders, one of the surprise 2-0 teams right now. Let's take a closer look at a couple of them. Marcus, you got the Raiders making the playoffs.
Yeah, I do, Laura. Look, last night, I think they found something. And let's not even get into Waller. Let's talk about the physicality that they played with up front. They were playing with a lot of starters out as well on that offensive line and was able to contain the pass rush for the most part. Derek Carr looked good. And John Gruden was calling plays at a very high level. Still concerned about their defense, but they have mismatches all over that offensive side of the ball.
Dan, Mitchell Trubisky has the Bears at 2-0. Chicago headed to the playoffs.
No, they're not going to get there. Here's the thing. They're having good results with bad habits, and that's kind of been a trademark of Mitchell Trubisky, and he's the leader of it. He's definitely improved, but the footwork and the mechanics, he still gets away with good end results. This defense is much improved, and their offensive line is playing better. But I think it's going to come back to haunt them when it's at the most inopportune time with the bad habits.
Look, I know it's early, but is any division looking better than the NFC West? Lots of 2-0 teams out there. Arizona off to an incredible start, led by Kyler Murray, who has rushed for 158 yards already, the most by a QB through two games since Mike Vick in 2006. Russell Wilson looking like an early MVP candidate. He's completed 83% of his passes with 9 touchdowns and just 1 interception. And offensively, the Rams are looking like the team we saw back in 2018. Through 2 games, they're rushing for the 3rd most yards per game behind only the Packers and the Browns. Our football Football Power Index loves the NFC West, apparently. You can see why, giving each of the four teams a greater than 50% chance to make the postseason. Seattle has the fourth best chance to make the Super Bowl across the entire NFL, trailing only the Ravens, Chiefs, and Packers. Marcus, as it stands right now, who's your favorite out of the NFC West?
It's the Seahawks. Listen, Russell Wilson right now is playing at a level that's crazy. And we're seeing some other quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers comes to mind as well, playing at that high level. But when you think about it, Els, Seattle beat a New England Patriots team, an Atlanta Falcons team, and you could say, that's whatever. But then both of those teams played them well. Atlanta can put up points in droves like we've seen, even though we're coming off one of the disasters. And then you look at the way New England played. It's hard to score five touchdowns against a Bill Belichick coach defense. Russ is playing out of his mind, and legitimately, I think that they finally found a one in DK Metcalf. What do I mean? A guy that can make Russell Wilson right, even if he makes a toss or throws the ball up for grabs. They've been lacking that for a while. Lockett is 100% legit. Offensive line playing well, and they're running the football. They have the elements that we see in today's NFL to get it done. They have the supreme being at quarterback. You start looking on the outside, they have matchup problems all over the place. And like Dan said, which I'm paying a lot of attention to, look how much Greg Olsen can continue to add to this offense if he continues to come along as well. Yeah. The Seahawks are top of this division for me.
Yeah, the connection between Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf, especially on deep throws, is a thing of beauty. Dan, same question to you. Who wins the NFC West?
The Los Angeles Rams. Their demise has been much exaggerated. I want to show everyone why. And it really starts with Sean McVay is back to being the best illusionist in football. What do I mean by that? He's forcing defenders to kind of look in the wrong direction and then taking advantage of it. Start here with this cut down snug set by these two receivers. Now, Philadelphia is going to be playing in a cover three defense, meaning that corner's got the deep third and this defender has got that flat. Now, when they're playing in that zone coverage, because of that reduced split by these two receivers, this corner is taught to have vision through that outside receiver into the backfield of what's going on. You got to see the quarterback through that receiver. Now, what Sean McVay is going to do is right before this ball gets snapped, he's going to motion Cooper Kupp on that jet sweep. Now, what that does is it changes that defender's vision. This corner now goes vision from Cooper Kupp to Van Jefferson. Now, I want to run it back because everyone needs to see how quickly this happens for the defense. Count in your head. From time one, you're before 2 seconds, that happens. Again, that vision changes from him to him. And then the ball gets snapped, and what's going to happen? We're going to get a play fake coming at this receiver or at this look from that corner, right? That corner, again, has vision through that defender now into the backfield. Look at it again. This guy still has vision into the backfield with that play fake. I told you what. His job was to be the deep third. That no longer has happened. This defender's job was what? To be the flat. That is no longer happening. And look at the space that Sean McVay has created for this throw onto the sideline. Receivers, defensive backs, eyes in the wrong spot. Now let's go to this reverse by Robert Woods. I want everyone to see this is a bunch set. 1, 2, 3. This is Cooper Kupp. He was part of that bunch initially. He's going to go in motion across the formation. That safety is going to run with him. That's man-to-man coverage. So now you've created this what? Two receivers this side, two receivers that side. I want everyone to see what he does again with this pre-snap motion. Here comes Cooper Kupp. Philadelphia is going to decide to do what we know is rock and roll. That safety is going to go down and play that bunch again. This safety is now going to go kick back and play that middle of the field. Sean McVay knows exactly what those guys are going to do. Again, the illusion of a play. Here comes the fake. Look at these defenders. Vision into the backfield. Vision into the backfield. This safety. Vision into the backfield. Where is the ball going to go? Well, what's happening is Robert Woods is coming on this reverse. You're going to get a lead block by that bunch tight end, and then watch what happens because of all that movement pre-snap. I want everyone to see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 defenders for Philadelphia are in a 10 by 10 box, all because of that pre-snap shifting and movement, and it's a walk-in for Robert Woods. Sean McVay is back to being in his bag. He's the best illusionist in football. He forces you and your eyes to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and then he takes advantage of it. That reason, I'm taking the Rams.
All right, so you got the Rams in the NFC West. Marcus is taking the Seahawks. I'd personally take the Cardinals. Let's talk a little bit more about them. And that connection with Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins has been money. It's made all the difference in the world. After ranking 29th in yards per attempt to receivers last season, Murray is now connecting on 88% of his pass attempts to D-Hop for nearly 9 yards per throw. It makes a big difference when you got a guy like that. And, Sheffy, when you think about the Cardinals, how much do you think with having three teams now from one division is a possibility for the new playoff rules, the expanded playoffs? How do the Cardinals factor into all this in your mind?
With the expanded playoff, I say, why aren't the Arizona Cardinals a playoff contender? I know people are saying, are they for real? Well, they're 2-0. Their former number one overall pick quarterback is lighting up the league, and weren't not for Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott and Cam Newton, we'd be talking a lot more about Kyler Murray, who's been very effective so far in the early season. And if you look at the way the schedule sets up for them the next 3 weeks, the Lions, the Panthers, at the Jets, at the Cowboys, before coming home for back-to-back home games against the Seahawks and Dolphins. As you look at that schedule, they'll be favored in the majority of those games. So if they're already 2-0 and can reel off a few more wins here, why wouldn't they be a viable playoff contender, especially with the way that Kyler Murray is running the football, throwing the football, DeAndre Hopkins making plays? Kyler Murray, if he continues to play like this, could become a part of the MVP conversation for all we know. But they are playing good football right now. With the expanded playoff format, with the way their schedule lies, no reason they can't be a playoff contender.
Yeah, Marcus, what sticks out when you see that schedule for the Cardinals going forward?
I mean, like Shefty said, they should be able to win. And then I think when you get to Dallas, obviously, you start looking at the challenging part of their schedule. And also, we're talking about their division. Their division has three teams. Like, Dan is going Rams. I'm going Seahawks. And obviously, AZ, San Francisco, I think, is just getting to the point where it's too depleted. Too many important players are going to be missed. And that kind of takes them out of the equation. But I can see it, especially with the expanded playoff of Arizona getting in that thing.
Yeah, it's really tough for the 49ers. Hard to imagine that conversation without them even really being a factor. All right, coming up on NFL Live, why Cam Newton isn't even thinking about his money right now and why his offense is money. We're taking a closer look at the past promising O. That's next on NFL Live.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
NFL Primetime is back with Boomer and Booger this year, Sundays at 7:30 Eastern, only on ESPN Plus. Nobody takes you through all the highlights and breaks down every game like they do. The show is available to stream each week, so you can watch it anytime you want, Monday through Wednesday, on any device you choose. To get ESPN Plus, download the app or go to ESPNPlus.com. Check out this moment after the Colts game on Sunday. Darius Leonard tossing his gloves to a fan in the stands. So, so sweet of him. But then the fan who caught the gloves found a surprise inside, Leonard's wedding ring. They took to Twitter looking to help return it to its rightful owner. Leonard saw the tweet, responded, "I need that back." And he was on SportsCenter today, explained what happened next. Listen to this.
Well, luckily, before I even got home and told her, You know, they DM'd her and told her that they have the ring. So once I told her, you know, it was kind of, okay, yeah, I believe you because, you know, they hit me up too. It would have been bad if I would have came home without the ring and nobody would have said anything. So luckily, something was said to her.
Phew for Darius Leonard there. Obviously, the hurry he's talking about it is his wife. And in fact, they've known each other since kindergarten. They were married weeks after he was drafted. I got to ask you guys, like, has either one of you lost a wedding ring? Marcus, you ever lost one before?
I'm looking for one right now. To be honest, I lost one. I'm looking for one right now as we speak. I have some backups, but it ain't the one wife bought for me. So I'm having some issues
right now.
You're
in the doghouse.
You lost it cutting all that fruit that you mentioned before. And yeah. So avocados and apples.
Where is that thing? Dan would never lose his wedding ring, would he?
No, I've lost. I wear the rubber with Kalo, so yeah. I've lost plenty of these, but
I'll just
they're
say,
replaceable.
I would be in a lot of trouble if I lost mine. Shout out to my husband.
I would have a very stern conversation with my wife if she lost it.
Oh, I love it. All right,
stern.
Enough of that. It wasn't the result Cam Newton and the Patriots wanted against the Seahawks. You're about to see him getting stuffed, and that's why we wrote stuffed on that thing right there. He got stuffed at the goal line, but it's been a promising couple of weeks with Cam at the helm for the Patriots in the post-Brady era. He's doing it on a bargain, too, with his one-year contract base salary, $1.05 million. Cam says he's not worried about getting paid.
That is literally the last of my worries. And if we had to put an analogy in it, that's probably under so much work at my desk that, you know, I'm not really too much focused on. I do admire and love the culture of the Patriots. It's been a place for me that's been therapeutic. This is a place that has been kind of rather challenging for my growth, and it's making me better. And also, you know, it has been a place that has given me everything for my needs at this particular point in time in my life. So, you know, yet through it all, I'm going to let the cards shuffle the way they shuffle and do the things that I can't control.
Yeah, listen, those cards could shuffle for a real big payday for Cam if things go exactly how he wants them to. And I want to ask you guys, because it feels like after week one, everyone here was questioning the explosiveness of the Pats playmakers around Cam. Marcus, does he have enough around him to continue to have success there?
Yes, he does, Laura. And like I've been saying, we're talking about Cam damn Newton. He changes the face of the team. Listen, this is not a go against Tom Brady, but when you have Cam Newton, you double up a playbook, especially when he's throwing at the level he's throwing. Look at his pass to Julian Edelman down the middle. He's getting N'Keal Harry involved, who we said couldn't play, who we said wasn't going to turn into a guy. He's moving the ball around. He's placing the ball in great spots. He's making throws with velocity, throwing the ball down the field. And also adding the RPO game. Cam is making everybody better on this offense like we thought he would do because defenses have to play these guys differently now. There's a little more space to operate because he's at quarterback and you always have the threat of him taking off and racking up yardage on the ground based on his athleticism.
Yeah, Marcus mentioned doubling the playbook with Cam Newton there. Two games, two wildly different game plans. What can you say, Dan, about the play calling that we've seen so far from Josh McDaniels?
Oh, it's been spot on. And Marcus is right. I actually have it written in my notes that Cam is certainly a dual threat quarterback, but now it looks like he's made the Patriots a dual threat offense. Right? Week one, it was this ground and pound and 43 run attempts, and that's certainly what I expected this offense to be. And then last week, it becomes throw it around all over the lot. And so now as an offense, Josh McDaniels and the Patriots can go, we're unpredictable, right? Where I thought they would be predictable, and a lot of people thought they're going to be so run heavy. And Cam's growth and development over a short period of time as a passer, but not only that, like, listen, in the NFL, it's about production. You can work as hard as you want during the week. Guys want production. They want to see what you do on game day. And so the fact that he has gone out and then produced on the field and looked the way he has on the field, Marcus says it well, where it's now going to grow the playbook. And now that a play caller goes, you don't know what we are going to do. And that's when you are in the offensive as an offense, right? And so it's that to me is surprising, and it's also scary. I also want to say this, and this wasn't part of our conversation. Hearing him talk, I think is really, like, impressive. we should all be able to learn a little bit of that. I know NFL players, because Cam could be bitter and Cam could be salty, but he's decided to turn it into a positive. Yeah. And I think just the mindset is showing itself on the field.
Yeah, the offense has looked really good. Cam's tallied 13 rushing first downs this season. That's tied with Ezekiel Elliott for the most in the NFL. All right. His other guy who was the Patriots quarterback would be Tom Brady, and he got his first win with the Bucs. Expectations were high, especially from Leonard Fournette.
I expect a lot out of his. He's a six-time Super Bowl, so I expect a lot out of him. Just know that.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
National Voter Registration Day is September 22nd. For more information, visit IamAVoter.com.
Oh, cannot wait for this. The most anticipated matchup of the entire season coming your way on Monday Night Football right here on ESPN. Patrick Mahomes and the 2-0 Chiefs taking on Lamar Jackson and the 2-0 Ravens. It's at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Our coverage begins with Monday Night Countdown at 6. All right, Tom Brady got his first win as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, but look, it's not really been smooth sailing so far for his relationship with Gronk. He brings Gronk out of retirement, only targeted him four times. One of those times actually resulted in an interception, but Bruce Arians not concerned.
We're not throwing the ball 50 times to the tight ends, so that's what we got receivers for. That's where our offense is built. Gronk's playing pretty solid. Great run blocking in the fourth quarter, so I'm not concerned with his pass catches or his targets.
All right, look, just a couple of things here. I don't think Gronk went to Tampa Bay to just be a blocking tight end. And the other thing is Tom Brady has thrown touchdown passes to tight ends more than any other quarterback ever. So, Dan, what do you make of Arians' comments there?
Yeah, this one bothers me. First of all, why did you bring Gronk in? And then why did you keep O.J. Howard and not decide to move him for another receiver? Second of all, coaching in the NFL right now should not be about what the player's position grouping is. It is about these are the pieces that we have. I don't care what position group you put them in. Your job is to find out where you can move those guys around to help them play well and help the offense play well. Find those matchup pieces. Look at the NFL offenses. Kansas City, Travis Kelce, Philadelphia, Zach Ertz, Baltimore and their tight ends with Mark Andrews, the Saints and Jared Cook, San Francisco, George Kittle. Last night, did he watch Monday Night Football? Like, did you watch Waller go off? And so they've got good receivers, but this is something where Bruce Arians should be going, I don't really care what we've labeled them. They should be pieces we move around. Tom Brady's notorious for that. So this one bothers me. I promise you it bothers Tom Brady hearing that. And so I think Bruce Arians needs to look at his team offensively as football players rather than certified or specific positions.
Yeah, the statement is ridiculous. Listen, Bruce Arians knows better. Bruce Arians has watched and paid attention to what Tom Brady has done his entire career, and he knows the rapport that Tom Brady built with Gronk, and he knows the rapport that he had with Aaron Hernandez. He knows how he's operated in those offenses in New England for a long time and how important the tight end position is. Whether you want to split them out and put them in the slot, whether you want to take Gronk and put him on the outside against Kansas City and make a play to win the game, whatever you want to do. But you cannot get on television and say a quarterback as Tom Brady, whose tight ends have been instrumental in the success that he's had in this league, say that we have receivers for that. They are receivers too. Quite frankly, your quarterback, Bruce Arians, is more comfortable with those guys than he is with the receivers on the outside. So to make a statement like that is crazy. I get what he's saying. Mike Evans is legit. Godwin obviously coming back when he gets back is legit. He has wide receivers. But come on, B.A. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Well, the fact of the matter is Bruce Arians' offense has never has utilized the tight end. It hasn't seemed to use the tight end as much as it has used other positions. And last year we heard talk about how good O.J. Howard looked. They had Cameron Brate. They've had other tight ends. You tell me the last time a tight end flourished in an offense with Bruce Arians. It just doesn't seem to happen. His offenses are great. They're well coached. It's just that the tight ends don't ever seem to emerge to be forces. And so far, that's been the case through the first couple of weeks of the season. And I'm going to guess that it'll probably be that way throughout the end of the season. Now, there might be occasional flashes where O.J. Howard pops up, Rob Gronkowski pops up, Cameron Brate pops up. But by and large, he does use the wide receivers more than he uses the tight ends.
It's so interesting because they got over $18 million invested in tight ends in this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, too. All right, let's talk about another offensive weapon who also spoke this week. Leonard Fournette, talking about his relationship with Tom Brady. Listen to this.
It's cool. I'm hard on Tom. Tom hard on me. You know, he expect a lot of me. I expect a lot of his ass. He's a six-time Super Bowl. So I expect a lot of him. Just know that. Sometimes I'm like, Tom, he might hold the ball too long. You know what I mean? He might tell me I'm not running the ball hard enough. So I'm like, damn, Tom say that. I'm really not running the ball hard enough. So I got to come back and do what I got to do.
All right. I'm going to ask you, Marcus, about Fournette impacting this offense. But I just want to take a moment to note there that he's being hard on Tom Brady. I mean, he just got there to Tampa Bay. But anyway, how has Leonard Fournette impacted this offense so far?
He's going to be a major impact. Look, we had this conversation when he left Jacksonville, and that was a question of if he was a legit back or not. Look, you surrounded Leonard Fournette with a lot of people that can make plays. You surrounded him with a box that's not going to be stacked with 30 people every time he gets the ball handed off to him. He can make an impact. I think he averaging 9 yards a carry against Carolina. So, look, the bottom line is this. Leonard Fournette is in the best situation he's been in since he's been in the NFL because he has a quarterback. It's going to be easier for him, and it's going to be easier for Brady because he is going to have a guy between Fournette and Ronald Jones. He can hand the ball off and play power football.
Yeah, first of all, with the people that they do have in the outside, Godwin and Evans, teams have to figure out or decide, are we going to play coverage? If they do, then Leonard Fournette should be a focal point for that game plan. And if they don't, then let's say they throw the ball early, Tampa Bay, and they take a lead, he should be their finisher. You know, Brady hasn't necessarily had a finisher at tailback, and Fournette's never really had the opportunity to become the finisher. So he should be that guy that they turn to and say, go win this game for us with 10 carries in the fourth quarter after we take a lead.
Huge matchup this weekend with Aaron Donald and the Rams traveling to Buffalo. Bill's offensive coordinator Brian Daboll was asked about his game plan against Aaron Donald. Here's what he said.
Maybe you can miss the bus. I just started, you know, we just kind of put this game to bed that we just played and started to watch his first two games. Look, he's as premier of a lineman as I've seen.
All right, time for one more thing before we go. Marcus, is Daboll on to something there with Donald?
You damn right he is. Listen, even though Aaron Donald didn't come up and show up on the stat sheet against Philly, his mere presence makes the Rams a better defense. And oh my goodness, if he finds a matchup that he likes, he's going to exploit you all game. You better make sure Josh Allen knows that his head better be on the swivel.
Mine is going to be to the young quarterback, Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins. Control what you can control around you, whether it's a terrible organization and bad players, injury to Saquon Barkley, or a rebuild. Don't allow the circumstances of what's around you to force you to regress or to develop bad habits. Control what you can control with your own growth.
There are reports out there that Devonta Freeman is expected to agree to a new deal with the New York Giants, and he may, and that deal may get done. But as of right now, this moment, the two sides still remain apart on terms. They do not have an agreement. They're waiting to see if they can hammer out one. And until they have one, Devonta Freeman will remain a free agent, but maybe he does wind up with the Giants.
Guys, our Patriots reporter Mike Reese put a tweet out giving out some nicknames that Cam Newton apparently has for the Patriots. I'm going to run through some of them here. Dirty Dave, Smokin' Joe, Winnie the Pooh, Freddie Mason, Buzzo, Berkey, Bo Diddley, Crazy Legs, Bent Dog, Twin Number 1, Twin Number 2, Highway 11, Doughboy, Stiddy, Hoister, Little Butt, my personal favorite, and My Germs. But the funniest thing is Little Butt, which I loved, apparently it's actually Little Bud. The recipient of that nickname responded to Mike Reese and said it's not Little Butt, it's Little Bud.
Tough break for Doughboy, though, right?
Oh.
Hey, Doughboy, that's not a good one.
Winnie the Pooh is so good. I think we should all have nicknames like that. What do you guys think?
Marcus, what's my nickname?
Dan Wagon.
I'll tell you. That's private.
We'll see you on NFL Live tomorrow.